ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com outra explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Law Benfica podcast. My name is Alfredo Fumaças. With me tonight, Cristiano Oliveira. Como é que é, Cristiano?
Como é que é, pá? Tudo bem? Glad to be back. Glad to be back. And obviously, this time in, a little bit higher spirits.
Yeah. And also the other Oliveira, this one with the D before the Oliveira, Dave de Oliveira. What's going on, brother?
Good to be back this week. Much better week than the previous week. And always good to be back here.
We got a great show for you tonight. We're serving up episode number 335. We'll recap the Braga game, look ahead to the what's up for Benfica in the UCL as the draw took place this past week. Also another draw taking place today, the Allianz Cup, as Cristiano likes to call it, the Taça de Cerveja. Groups were drawn today, and so we'll discuss and talk through some fixtures there. But before we get there, and let's get started with the Braga game, if he could travel to the Pedreira this past Sunday. I'll give you the lineup. Vlaco Dimos, André Almeida, Dias, Ferro, Grimaldo, Florentino, Tarabt in the middle, Pizzi and Rafa on the wings, RDT and Sofaljovic up front. Cristiano, you like that? Sofaljovic?
That was good.
Sofaljovic. It's clever. Cristiano, let me start with you, man. Good to have André Almeida back for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell he adds a different dimension to the ball club, something that Nuno Tavares was struggling with over the last couple of weeks. It's always good to see the veteran back there. This is a guy that I think we have grown to appreciate over the last couple of years. No matter how much we complain about the right back spot, Mr. Consistency, Mr. All Reliable, steps in there once again and did just a fine job this weekend against Sporting de Braga.
Yeah. One game, one
Capitão.
Assist.
Capitão.
One game, one assist.
Mm-hmm. Phenomenal play by him. I mean, that was a terrific play. We'll get to that in a couple of seconds. You always get me to skip ahead like half of the game. But, yeah, he came in, looked like he did not miss a beat. There are some people that were still very surprised that he didn't get the call against Futebol Clube do Porto. But, nonetheless, he stepped in this weekend and did just fine.
I never thought I'd say this, but I'm glad André Almeida is back and started.
That's a great point.
Something that the whole Benfica Nation was really clamoring and talking about, that midfield pairing along with the center forward pairing. But finally, it seems like we got our wish in terms of a midfield pairing. Samadi sat, Tarabt got the start. Cristiano, I know that Tarabt is a huge you're a huge admirer of Tarabt.
I was going to agree with you on the other side. He's a huge fan of mine. Yes.
And I was going to tell you, you're not allowed to talk about Tarabt unless you sing his song, the song that has been made famous on Twitter.
I don't want to scare away any of the listeners here, so I won't sing it for you. Go on YouTube and make sure you check out the Benfica podcast account on Twitter and on Instagram, and I'm pretty sure Alfredo or Dave, somebody will put it up there. So I'll spare you guys that horrific singing. As far as Tarabt, I mean, look, this is exactly what I've been calling for over the last couple of weeks. I was very excited to see him in the starting 11, and you see the difference that he makes in the midfield, the ball movement. Benfica all of a sudden looks like a posing threat at every time they get the ball going forward. So I was glad to see it. One game, one man of the match performance. Things are only going to get better from here on out. And I mean, do I have to tell you guys I was excited? I mean, I love the guy. I've loved the guy for the last couple of years. I don't understand the hatred that he's been getting from a lot of the Benfiquistas. That, I got to be brutally honest. It just seems like a lot of people aren't forgiving him for the last 4 years of what, many will call unprofessional behavior. I had an opportunity to speak with him for a few hours, and he explained to me the whole situation, and yes, it's not something you want to forget about, but you kind of understand. And there's something about Tarabt and other players that I think a lot of fans disregard, you know, when they watch these guys on TV, and which is the human side of things. These guys are humans. They go through their ups and downs. And yes, he himself admits he could have been a little bit more professional, but nonetheless, he's done everything he's needed to do to get back in the good graces of the Benfiquistas. He's helping the club right now to achieve valuable points. So I think people need to get rid of or get over the hatred that they have for this guy and just support him like they support everyone else on this club. As long as you have a Benfica shirt on and you're playing out there every week, I'm a root for you. Yeah, I might like you or dislike you a little bit more than other guys on the field. But at the end of the day, I want you to be successful because your success is going to add success and bring success to my ball club. So I wish people would get over that. But it is what it is. He's proven the doubters wrong. And he played well once again this weekend. And he's exactly what Benfica needs in that midfield without when Benfica is missing Gabriel. He's the closest thing they have. I mean, there's not. I don't think there's another suitable option for that position right now on the current roster, unless you bring PZ into the middle. What do you think?
Look, I'm watching Tarabt in the midfield, and obviously I think it's clear of what he adds to this Benfica midfield in terms of construction, in terms of passing ability, passing accuracy, vision, read of the game. But even effort, man, I find myself watching him run to close up gaps, to get the spaces where he needs to be. And he's just working. He works so hard.
No, he told me, because that was actually, you know, I don't mean to cut you off, but, you know, I do it often. That was actually one of the things I told him. I said, no, I've never seen you work this hard. And I've watched you play from a very young age. And I've never seen you put in this shift the way you do now. And he said, look, I understood that in order for me to turn everyone's opinion on me, to finally get back in good graces and for me to play, this is the player I have to be now. The former, the Delta Rap that I grew up being, that one's gone. And in order for me to get everybody, to get in everybody's good graces, I'd have to perform like this. And so this is a new me. So I'm glad you hit it on the head, because that's exactly what he pointed to as being the turning point in his new life at Benfica.
But the thing is that, like, as you see him go through, you know, the paces and running and cover, I almost feel myself feeling bad for him, because it just looks like he's
awkward.
He's not awkward, but he's like working really, 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 really
like extra hard to go 2 feet.
Yeah,
like he's just
working extra hard, and you almost feel bad for the guy. Because number one, as you know, at Delta Rapt, he's not that eight, even though he could do it because of his vision, because of his ability to go forward. But when you see him on a defensive side of the ball, you almost feel sorry for the guy, because he's working so hard and no one should be working that. He just looks like he's working way, way hard than anyone else on the field. Florentino makes it look effortless. That up, he just looks like he's working super, super hard. You just feel like that guy, he's gonna get stretchered off at the end of the game because he can't walk to the locker room.
And I think I've said this before, Dave, you may recall, which is I much prefer he play as a second striker. I think the guy brings something to this ball club that we lack, which is that creativity, the ability to beat 1, 2, 3 guys and come up with the stellar finish, because he has all that. And we've seen that, at least for now, he's staying in shape. He's you know, committing himself to this, you know, to the role that or to the opportunity, I should say, that Bruno Lage has given him. But right now, I think we really lack someone at that eight position. And even though, as you've mentioned, Alfredo, it looks awkward. He looks like he's worked, but it's what he needs to do in order to play. And I think right now, as I mentioned before, I don't think there's a better option with the exception of Gabriel. Dave, aside from him playing that, who else you see on this roster that could possibly?
There is nobody. With Chiquinho out until the new year, there is nobody except for Gabriel. And even with Tarabt in the lineup, he brought in a Florentino that was just as dominant as well. I know Tarap got the man of the match award, but you could have easily given it to Florentino as well. He had like 96% passing accuracy, had like five interceptions of the ball, right? So he also had a very strong game. So the case could have been made for both of those players for player of the match.
Cristiano, Tarap doing it at both ends. Do you think he should change his name, his number from 49 to 69?
Let's keep it PG-13, man. There's kids listening to him.
You know who's not doing it at the front end, at least, is
my boy
Sofaljovic. Dave, what's going on, man? Do you think that João Félix makes that much of a difference? Do you think he's like most of the Blue Jays lineup that's going through a slump? What's the deal?
I think we all need to take a deep breath and just relax. The same thing happened with Benfica and Seferovic last season. Our goal output by strikers at the same time last season was only 3 goals by strikers. We're currently at 2. A lot of our goals are coming from the midfield, but you watch after this international break, I bet you Seferovic has a brace, has a 2-goal game. And I think we just need to breathe and relax a little bit because the chances are there. I know this guy has a lot of pressure on himself that he's putting him in RGT. They just want to get that goal, break the ice. But I think we just need to give it a couple of more weeks and let it be. They're gonna get their goals.
Cristiano, when does the milk get sour with Seferovic?
Aquela merda está toda podre, pá.
Já está toda podre. É cheira azedo.
Aquela merda estava toda podre. Quem tinha a razão toda era o professor Vitória. Mas depois, a coisa ficou complicada. And look, he had a tremendous season last year.
What's the timeline on Seferovic, man? Man, there's got to be a timeline, right?
Two more games. Two more games after this international break. If he's still missing, I think, 2 more games after the international break, then maybe give Vinicius a chance with RDT. But I think it's still very early, guys.
Here's the thing.
Man, I could go so many ways with this.
You really can.
Because the guy had a phenomenal season last year, which is something out of the ordinary for him, right? Then they go spend $37 million on 2 strikers that play basically the same role he does. Then they don't sell him when last year was as high as his value is ever going to get. And then they bring in 2 guys who just, I mean, it's mind-boggling. But I know his fans will tell you the guy puts in the shift, he presses, and the guy's work rate is unmatched, right? But when he's missing and wasting the clear, it's not like he's not getting the opportunities, but he's still putting it. He's getting the opportunities. And I mean, it's harder.
1v1s with the keeper.
It's harder to miss than it is to score, and he finds a way to miss it. It's just
inside the 6.
It's crazy. It's been, I mean,
with poor control.
There's one he gets, all he has to do is tap, and he wants to do the impact. I just look. It's very frustrating to see what he's going through right now. Hopefully, he turns it around. Raul Tomás is another guy. You could tell he's pressing. I think he's going to get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt from the coaching staff because he's not playing with Price's preferred position. And with that, I'd say, look, for people that are frustrated about Raul Tomás, let's not forget Oscar Cardozo, Benfica's all-time foreign goal scorer, leading foreign goal scorer, whatever. He went, I believe the first 6 or first 7 games of his Benfica career without scoring a goal. And then he came around and he started scoring them pretty easy. So let's just take the chill pill. But it's very frustrating to watch right now. Our striker part of tandem. It just, I mean, Dave, I know you love Seferovic, but what is
Sofajovic?
What is up?
No, he should have had a hat trick by the first half there. He missed 3 good
trick against Pas Freira, and we're still waiting.
Here's my take. Look, all history aside, and yes, he was instrumental last year, scoring as many goals as he scored, grabbing a ball at Prata. But here's the thing, man. As a forward, you get paid a lot of money to score goals. And if you're not scoring goals, I'm sorry, man. But you need to get some bench time and get some time to the guys that have been waiting on the wings and that have been working hard. I'm sorry. I subscribe to the idea you've done us well in the past and you deserve a little extra chances. But at this point, you got to be – and thank God that the goals are coming from elsewhere. And Dave, you could talk through where we're getting the goals in the situation with the goal scorers in past years. But to me, if you're a goal scorer and you're missing those chances, you need a reset. And to me, that reset comes by the way of sitting on the bench. Dave, you want to run through as far as what the outputs of the strikers has been?
Yeah, so this year, 16 goals through the first five games this season, two by strikers, Seferovic and Vinicius in that first game against Pashvareda, 10 goals by midfielders, two by defenders, and then the other two were the own goals this past weekend against Braga. So compare that to the same time last season. We played three more games with the Champions League qualifying, but 17 goals scored in eight games, and three of those were by strikers, 12 by midfielders, and two by defenders. So very similar numbers. That's why I'm holding my hope with Seferovic after this international break. He comes and he's going to score two goals against Gil Vicente.
But should we be comparing any Benfica team of any Benfica season against Rui Bombus last year?
Don't disrespect Sporting's hopeful coach like hey, that, please.
You heard it here first. Leave it to Sporting. I very much doubt that, but I see what you're doing there, Dave. Yeah, man, it's a tough situation, man. But this is pro sports, man, and a team pays a lot of money to their players for them to perform. And if you're not performing, for sure, if I didn't perform at my job, my boss would have a talk with me, or he would let me go. So I think from a professional standpoint, professional sports, hey, there's no crying in baseball. You just got to get it done, man. And right now, Seferovic is not getting it done. So I don't know if this Elias is going to wait for him to come back from the international break to see what happens, what kind of outing he had for the national team. Maybe the national team and scoring some goals there will re-energize him, as Dave has mentioned, he hopes that he gets a brace. But to me, it's decision time for Lage, especially with the UCL group stages on the horizon. So
I'll tell you, I think we got a better shot at scoring some goals if we signed the two defenders from Braga, because they did a terrific job of scoring for us this weekend.
Zgaiu. Would you take Zgaiu over Andre Almeida on the right?
No. No. They're very similar players for that. I stay with my guy.
Stay with your guy?
Almeida. Stay with Almeida. Keep up,
both the team
and he's
captains.
Got a dope-ass mustache.
So anyway, just running through the game real quick. I know that we probably gotten way too far ahead. So 25th minute, Pizzi with the PK, a clear PK. Then Benfica came out strong for the second half. 47th and 51st minutes, 2-0 and 3-0. The second one from Pizzi, and then the third goal, an own goal. And then I think at that point, the game was put out of reach. And then in the 73rd minute, another own goal. So a very good win for Benfica, 4-0 at Braga, something that Benfica hadn't done in quite some time, Dave.
Yeah, 30 years last time that they beat them 4-0 up in Braga in the 89-90 season. So like you said before, when it was JJ's teams, this would be a place where we'd struggle a lot, but lately we seem to have their number both in Braga and in Lisbon.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big 3 points there, and especially a game after that unfortunate game that we had against Porto Estoril, where we didn't seem ourselves. It was a good answer from Benfica in beating Braga. And Braga's been getting shellacked by both Benfica, Porto, and Sporting. And it's almost like they want to be at our level, and then they come out and play at our level, and they always end up getting spanked.
I mean, but look, man, they can't compare themselves, especially to Benfica. And
well, but they want to.
Of course, you want to.
They
want to
be in that running for the top spots.
I
want to
be Brad Pitt, but you know, I got to settle for Cristiano Oliveira. You know what I mean? It is what it is. They just don't waste the same amount of money. They don't have the same structure. They don't have the same capital to build a deep roster like a Benfica does, or a Porto to a certain extent. They're just very limited, but they've done tremendously well over the last 10 years to go from where they were at one point to where they're at now. I mean, they are without a shadow of a doubt at the very worst, the fourth you know, biggest team in the Portuguese Liga NOS, you know. So they're fighting right there with Sporting year after year. That's who's 3 and 4. And so they've made a huge leap. So I think we should give them a lot of credit. And it's great to strive for the stars, but, you know, hopefully for them, for their sake, they'll get there at some point. For our sake, you know, hopefully Benfica stays at the top. But at least they have the right mindset. They have the right attitude. And they have the desire to get to that, you know, to get to that stage and to get to those places as far as competing for a top three team in Portugal. I think it's brilliant. I think more teams in Portuguese football should strive to be like them.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we encounter the international break, the dreaded international break that all Benfica fans are really too happy about. And Dave, quite a few Benfica players were called up to their respective national teams. You want to run through that list?
Yeah, for sure. So starting with the Portuguese senior squad, Ruben Dias got called up. Ferru got his first call up to the national squad, replacing Pepe, who went down with an injury. And Pizzi and Rafa also have been called up. For the under-21 Portuguese squad, Nuno Tavares, Florentino and Xhota. And for Greece, we have Vlachodimos and Samaris. And Cristiano's boy, Tarap, got called up to the Moroccan national team. And my boy, Seferovic, got called up to the Swiss national team.
Yeah. So an international break, as we mentioned. So Benfica will get a break in the action here. Well, you know, in domestic competition. But this past week, Benfica did find out who is going to be their opponents in the group stages of this year's Champions League. And Benfica was drawn into Group G. Dave, run through the teams that Benfica got drawn with, and also the dates and the fixtures that are lined up for Benfica in this group stage.
Yeah, so we got drawn with Zenit from Russia, Lyon from France, and Red Bull Leipzig from Germany. So the fixtures start with us playing at home against Leipzig on the September 17th. Then we go to Russia to face Zenit on October 2nd. Then travel back to Lisbon to play Lyon on the 23rd of October. Then we do the return leg in France on November 5th. Travel to Germany to play face Leipzig on the 27th of November. And we finish off the group stages at home against Zenit on December 10th.
Dave, what are your thoughts on this on the teams that were paired up with Benfica in this Group G, man?
This is a wide open group. Either one of these teams could finish first or can finish last. You can make the argument for either one. So the group is there for us to take. But as we've seen in the past, we seem to struggle in the Champions League. So I want to see us how we handle the Champions League, what lineups we put forward. But this group is here for us to take if we want to make it a priority.
Shannon, what are your thoughts on this group?
I think it's a very even group. I think every single team would be pretty evenly matched up, even though I give a slight edge to Lyon. And I think Leipzig is also a quality team. But again, if Benfica comes in there and plays their football and Bruno Lage is able to stick to what we've seen, stick to his philosophy, stick to the attacking football that we've grown accustomed to seeing under him, I think Benfica could pull off some surprises. But I think it's one of those groups that, which I think I said it last year as well, and Benfica, was it last year? I think it was last year.
A couple years ago.
And Benfica was a lot more disappointing than what we expected them to be. But I think any of
the Monaco and
I think any of the four teams could come out on top, and any four teams could come out last. So I think Benfica would definitely have their work cut out for them. I think they have to try to get maximum points at home and get positive results on the road, because I don't think even assuring themselves of that third place, if they don't play to the best of their ability, I don't even think assuring that third place is going to be something that's going to be easily for them to do. So I think Benfica has to, at the bare minimum, take care of business at home and play that same attractive football that we've grown accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, no, look, as you guys both mentioned, that it's a pretty evenly matched group. Like, also, like you guys said, any team can win this group and any team come out on the end. I don't think there's going to be a huge disparity in terms of points. So as Cristiano mentioned, even that the third spot is not going to be a clear thing. Not that you should be aiming for a third spot, but it's going to be very even, man. And the devil will be in the details in terms of how you get up get out of this group. I think that the trip to Russia in October is perhaps a very good, well-timed in terms of the weather-wise. But I think that these are all teams that at any given day, they could scrap and they could play and they can compete, man. But not having that clear favor in the group adds for a very unknown in terms of what the narrative is going to be for this group stages. And I'm, to be honest with you, I'm very excited about the pairings that Benfica got. Yes, there's no particularly marquee games in this schedule, but nonetheless, I think that all games should be very close.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think every team is pretty balanced. I think every game will be very exciting to come down to the end. So I hope Benfica do take this competition seriously rather than just settle for domestic competitions, because this is the one thing they keep talking about is having a Benfica Europeo. And so let's see it. I know they just spend they did spend a lot of money, 37 million plus another six now for Moratu, so that's 43 mil on three players. They spent like drunken sailors, but I don't know about the quality that they brought in. So I hope
so. Exactly like drunken sailors, they spent a lot of money
on Crow, but beer,
but didn't get
wine, cheap wine, cheap whores.
Didn't get much quality off of that. And well, you have yet to be seen, but yeah, Benfica did was perhaps one of the years where Benfica's post spent most of the money. I would say I would even venture to say this was a record year in terms of spending for Benfica.
It was absolutely
most of their history.
No, this is a record. They've never spent this much money in a transfer
window. I got you.
In their history. Yeah, that's most of their history. Yeah, most of their history includes most of it. Goes back to 13-13 when the club was first thought of.
Yeah, and look, in the winter transfer window, as the winter transfer window, I mentioned the winter transfer window because I have something to mention in regards to the winter transfer window. But this was the summer transfer window, and it closed up. And for all the clamoring that the Benfica fans have done in terms of getting a competitive right back, in terms of getting somebody to compete with Flaco Dimos, in terms of getting somebody for the midfield, nothing was done. Benfica was quiet as a church mouse. They did sign Morata Moratu. Sorry.
Morata was the goalie, right?
Morata is the striker for Atletico
Madrid. But no, we
Moreto.
Okay, that's Moreto. Yeah. I thought it was a move.
Yeah, so and to be honest, I'm actually excited for that kid, man. I've seen some clips on YouTube. He just looked beyond his age and some of the clips on YouTube. But, you know, YouTube is YouTube, and you take it with a grain of salt, obviously. But Cristiano, surprised that Benfica, despite hearing Bruno Lage talk throughout preseason that we need competition for every single position, and us and most of the fans identifying that there's some positions, man, disparity in quality.
You're really putting me on the spot here because there's some things I don't want to say.
Okay, Dave.
But I think this is the part as a Benfiquista that gets frustrating. Man, these people, no te envergüenza, man, they're going to say what they need to say to get people off their backs and then just point the fingers at everybody else and this and that. And they're going to tell you everything you want to hear without really having any intentions of doing what they say they're going to do. And that's the frustrating part as a socio, as a paying member, as a diehard Benfiquista. It's hard to accept because it feels like it's lie after lie. At some point, this shit needs to stop. You got to say what you mean and you got to mean what you say. You know what I mean? You can't have it no other way.
Well, politicians do that all the time.
But this ain't politics.
It might as well be politics because an election year is coming up.
As I said, you're going to make me say things I don't want to say out loud.
Don't say it.
And then you try to defend. And then like it's like now I feel like you want to fight me on this. Like I got to. But I'm a sit back and I'll just say, let's look. In Lodge, we trust. We shall see what happens.
What are your feelings, man? In Lodge, we trust. Let's go forward. Trust the process. Trust what we got. And hopefully there's some B kids that we could bring up to add to that this depth.
Well, and we didn't even loan out guys that were supposedly on the market like Fasia and Servi and even Zivkovic, where these guys haven't even been seen since America, right? So... they weren't let go either or loaned out. I know there's rumors of Servi going to Mexico because the Mexican transfer market is still open. So, but those guys, I thought they would have been at least loaned out, if not sold, because they really don't have any spots on this team as it stands right now.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that whole FACE thing has to do with the fact that Benfica has now identified Gabriel as somebody who's injury prone and they want to keep FACE just in case. But there were some talks with Benfica and Fenerbahce, if I'm not mistaken. But Fenerbahce hesitated because of FACE's age, the price they were asking for.
And they got Luis Gustavo.
Yeah.
Somebody got Luis
Gustavo. Yeah, so it was it's something that was a little bit hesitant. Zivkovic, I don't understand. Maybe it's just his salary. People not willing to pick up his salary. I don't know. I just saw today that Marković went back to Serbia. Was signed by Partizan, but so maybe that's where Zivkovic needs to go. But you know, it's a shame that these guys don't get the chances, and we all know that they're obviously not getting chances because maybe they're not working hard enough in terms of Zivkovic. Servi, I just don't know. I just right now with Rafa playing lights out, and then with Jota being the heir apparent to Rafa. It seems that Servi is the odd man out. And Cristiano has mentioned here that didn't really see anything special in Servi, and I think I have to agree. And is definitely a guy that's not even on the fence, is on the outs. So it's a shame that Benfica couldn't figure out, well, what their future is going to be. They'll continue to work with Bruno Lage, and we'll see what happens in the future. Perhaps maybe they'll work hard enough to warrant a shot. We spoke a lot here about the midfield pairing. Let's not forget, and I hate to reference back to Vitória, but at one point, Zivkovic was instrumental in Vitória's midfield. So maybe Lage doesn't see him that way, but nonetheless, I think that there's a lot more that meets the eye in terms of Zivkovic. Nonetheless, you know, it is what it is. Let's go to war with what we have. Another draw that occurred, as I mentioned, the Taça de Cerveja or Allianz Cup, as the Portuguese league likes to call it. There was a drawing for that. Dave, you want to run to the draw and also what the fixtures are?
Yeah, so we got drawn with Guimarães, Setúbal, and Sporting Covilha. Benfica plays Guimarães on the what's the pronouncing of that?
Covilha. It's because you don't have an accent. I mean,
okay.
The way you read it, you probably don't know the sound of an A with the tilde over it.
That's up on Alfredo's other podcast, teaching you to pronounce
the Portuguese podcast
language.
There you go.
You got it, Dave. You said it just like you spell it.
Okay. But so we play Guimarães at home on the 25th of September. Sporting Covilha. We go travel up north. They're up north, are they not? Everybody's up north these days.
Centro.
Okay. Quando sabe nada, calem, escaladinho. So I'm gonna sit back and let Alfredo look bad on this one.
Covilha Centro.
Okay. On October 5th, and then we go to Setúbal on the
Procura. That's by Serra.
Procura.
Yeah.
Procura.
Is it Cubillon?
Open your laptop. Open your
phone.
All
our listeners.
Look it up.
They're going to pull our Portuguese card. No, you got the computer.
Cubillon is Centro. É Centro. Agora amanhã o Ricardo Antunes já vai fazer um reparo nisso.
Já está.
Covilhã, vê lá aí, Covilhã. I bet you Covilhã é centro. Under Coimbra.
It's Serra, pá.
É Serra?
I think it's Serra.
It's near Serra. Mas Serra da Estrela?
It's Serra. Vila do Carvalho.
Do not tune into our podcast if you're looking for geography lessons.
Serra da Estrela, like I said. Man,
deixa ver.
Olha ali, Serra da Estrela. Não mexe. Olha ali.
Yeah, it's nowhere near Coimbra.
Então pronto, então é above Coimbra.
But listen, for any of you guys that listen to the podcast on the regular, you guys
wasn't are Serra Centro?
You guys are accustomed to me
isn't
winning
Serra
the
Centro?
Lá sei, man. Serra na Serra. Olha, nas montanhas.
Só sei que é alto.
Sim, é lá nas montanhas.
Anyway, Dave, go ahead, man.
Right. Yeah, so we wrap up the Allianz Cup on the 21st of December against Setúbal at Setúbal.
Oh, okay. So Guimarães, Sporting de Covilhã and Setúbal, three teams that were green and white. Two teams that were green and white, and then Guimarães. Guimarães, who is was trying to make a name for themselves this year. So not too bad. So Taça de Cerveja fixtures all set up to go. Dave, let's run through. What Benfica's got going on as far as September in terms of fixtures. So we've already started with Braga. What else we got for the end of the month? Until the end.
Yeah. After the international break, we've got the Gil Vicente on the 15th of September, followed by, like we said, Leipzig on the 17th, also at home. Then we travel up to Moriens on the 22nd of September. Then we have Guimarães at home on the 25th for the Taça da Liga, and we round out the month against Setúbal for the league, just the league, not League Cup.
Yeah. Oh, for the league, not for the League Cup.
No.
All right. Yeah. So quite a mix of competitions here: domestic, League Cup, and UCL is what the month of September has saved up for Benfica. And despite having a break in the action for international break this early on in September, we still have 5 games in what, 2.5 weeks?
Basically, and that's when you're going to see if our striking pairing is still not producing by middle of the month. That's probably when Lodge is going to make a change, because he's got to get some rest for these guys too. And there's going to be 5 games in about 2 week span there, so you'll see some rotation going on up front if there's no goal output at that time.
Yeah. No, I have to, something needs to be done. I have to agree with you, Dave. So, back to, I'm glad you didn't let me forget, Cristiano, back to the winter transfer window. And this is something that I found quite incredible. And I don't know how many people have had a chance to read this. But I think it was yesterday, I think, where they had the Quinas de Ouro, which is basically an award ceremony that's presented by the Portuguese League that awards, you know, best team, best player, not only in men's soccer, but also in futsal, also women's soccer, women's futsal, and also a couple other things that they award. But the Marítimo president was in attendance, and the Marítimo president actually mentioned that last year, before Rui Vitória's departure, everything was set for both Ferro and João Félix to go to Marítimo on loan for the rest of the season. And then Lage came in, and we all know what happened there. Cristiano, is it typical? Is it typical of Benfica? Or is it typical of Rui Costa, Rui Vitória? What do you make of this, man? That's quite incredible, right?
I mean, I don't think it's incredible at all. I don't think it's incredible. I think it's normal business for any club, any coach. In this particular club with young players like those two, Ferro and João Félix, if they're not part of the coach's plans, to loan them out and get first division experience. Now, what you want to call ludicrous and crazy is Rui Vitória not noticing and realizing the caliber of players they have. As far as wanting to send them out on loan, that's totally normal. If a player doesn't count for a player, for a coach, is not in their plans, it's totally normal. So I don't. So I'm not amazed by that. What I would be amazed is, we all know that Rui Vitória didn't appreciate these guys. Not so much Ferro, because Ferro's on the B team, right? And until Jardel got injured, there was really no need for Ferro. So let's give Vitória a pass on Ferro. But João Félix, we all knew he didn't appreciate the caliber player that he had at his disposal. So, again, it's normal, bro. If you're not part of the coach's plans, you're going to go out on loan.
Do you think it's a big gamble?
Right? I mean,
do you think it's a big gamble or even part of, you know, part of the impatience that currently exists within modern soccer or modern football, where young players are not giving enough time to produce and to really take a step into the next level?
It's modern times, and the biggest reason, Alfredo, it's the size of the club, the expectations of a club, the grandeza. Benfica, and I've often said this, I guess you just don't pay attention to me, but I've often said this, Benfica does not have the luxury of, and I'm not trying to harp on our neighbors, right? But our neighbors for years, you know, were developing players, were playing youngsters, and the fan base swallowed it up and ate it up. And that's fine. They were okay with coming in third place because they were selling Cristiano Ronaldo. To them, they were fine. Benfica doesn't have that luxury. Benfica has to compete for titles every single year, at least domestically. Benfica has to be there challenging. Imagine if he could come in third place 20 points behind first place and telling, yeah, but, you know, I'm trying to develop João Félix. The coach's head will be chopped.
But in a way, that's counterintuitive to the model that Benfica follows, which is a selling club.
Well, they fought, but they tell you they're not, though. So the message there is mixed because you keep telling you we're going to be something like this, something potential europeo. But then they sell off. So something there is not being translated to whomever. But at the end of the day, Benfica is still a club with youngsters, with veterans, that we have to challenge for titles. You know what I mean? We have to. So we don't it's the size of the club, man. I keep the Yankees don't have the luxury of restocking and sitting there with the youngsters. Same thing. It's what I see. The big clubs don't have that luxury unless shit just went totally out the window. They had a disastrous year where, again, they try to put a plan together and it just didn't work out. Then they'll turn around and say, look, it is what it is. We got to knock shit down and build from the ground up. But even the big clubs, they go, look at Real Madrid. They spend a ton of money to try to fix the problems that they've fallen into, and they still can't get it right. But does it stop them from spending money? They have that pressure of at least acting like you're putting a game plan together in order to be successful on the field.
Let me pose this question to you then, and following the same conversation, what would have been if instead of JJ saying, Bernardo, you could either play left back or not play at all, if he tells Bernardo you could stay on the team and you're going
to
get a
bro,
shot?
Bro, Bernardo, you guys, you're going to get me to take off my shirt here, bro. Because I've gotten into this argument with you guys, you and Steve in particular, for I don't know how many years now, okay? And I'm glad you brought this up because I've been thinking about this for a while because it just happened out with Chiquinho. When they talked about Chiquinho possibly being loaned out before he started playing really well in preseason and convincing Lodge's mind. And Chiquinho said, I don't care where I play. I just want to stay on the club and I want to fight for my spot. I want to wear this shirt. When Bernardo could have done that, he said, no, I want to be out. Bernardo could have stayed. And look, I'm going to be a left back today, but it is what it is. Chiquinho said, I play left back, right back, center. I'll play goalie. I just want to be on the club. And Bernardo, look, he's a fantastic player, and I hope he does come back one day. But stop with this freaking nonsense that Bernardo's a diehard Benfiquista, because if he would have stayed, he would have stuck around. No, he cared about money, 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 and he went to Monaco. He could have sat around and said, I'm a diehard Benfiquista. Let me singrar, right? Is that the word? Is that a singrar? Is that a proper way of saying it?
Yeah.
Sangrar is blood. Singrar. Let me singrar with this shirt on. And he chose the easy way out. He could have sat and fought first place. And look, and I've often said this. at the time, you had Nico Gaitán on one wing. You had Toto Salvio, healthy Toto Salvio. And it was just impossible for Renato to get the minutes at the time. It is what it is. Now, hindsight being 2020, you're like, whoa, what the hell were we thinking? Where are, where are the same people that were screaming for Zach Golus to get an opportunity when Jonas and Mitro and everybody was injured? Where are those people at now? Now nobody talks about that. Why? Because Zach Golus become a bust, right? Has Zach Golus been a phenom like they've done with Jovic, right? Oh, but Rui Vitória não soube aproveitar. When players turn out to be good, but what happened if Bernardo left and he was shit? How come nobody talks about Ivan Cavaleiro? Well, because he ain't Bernardo, right? He's not.
But even at the time.
At the time, Benfica had better options than Bernardo. Simply get over. Stop talking to me about Bernardo. I don't want to hear about it.
But I think that even when Ferro was promoted, Benfica had better options than Ferro.
This year? I don't think so.
Yeah. Anyway, this could be a conversation for many, many hours. But
what? Who's the option? Conti?
I'm saying.
This year. Last year. When Jardel got injured.
When he got promoted.
No, he got promoted. He was on the club. Bruno Lage came in and he promoted the four youngsters. No one expected Ferro to play. It was Ruben Diaz. It was Jardel.
Conti.
And Lema.
Lema.
Lema played 5 minutes. You're talking about Lema. At the time, it was just Conti. Once Jardel got injured, they decided to go with Ferro. How was that a better option, Alfredo? There wasn't a better option.
What did no significant minutes in the A team for Ferro? But what I'm trying to say is that he was due an opportunity.
But forget and I eat crow and I have no problem. You know, I admit it.
People didn't believe
in
you.
I didn't.
That's what I'm trying to get.
I didn't believe in Ferro, but the difference is Bruno Lage knew what he had in Ferro,
and Jorge Jesus didn't know what he had in Bernardo.
Bingo.
Probably not.
And Rui Vitória didn't know what he had in João Félix?
Bernardo was 110 pounds soaking wet at the time, bro. It's just like some people will tell you, perfect example, Thiago Dantas. A lot of people tell you the kid's got the caliber and the ability to play on this squad. But the guy's tiny. Imagine him against these big boys, especially in the Champions League. They're going to swallow him up. He needs to bulk up. Bernardo at the time, ladies and gentlemen,
has nothing to do
with he wasn't the player physique that he's become over the last couple of, for Christ's sake.
Well, he went on to Monaco that year
and he was okay
to have a breakout year for Monaco.
Year, the following year.
But he still had a very good, decent year.
Well, Ivan Cavaleiro was better than him at Valencia. I mean, at Monaco. Until Bernardo blew up. But nobody's talking about... What about El Costa?
Ivan Cavaleiro played at Monaco?
Yeah. What about El Costa doing his thing over there in...
Wolves?
Well, no, he's not a Wolves no more.
No, but he was a Wolves.
Yeah, exactly.
In second
division. But nobody talked... Look, man. It's just Bernardo blew up. There's plenty of players that have
but
also...
But did you ever have a doubt that Bernardo wouldn't blow up?
I don't want to say a doubt. Look, we knew he was a good player. And did I think he warranted an opportunity in the main squad? Yeah. But I'm not as, I don't want to say blind, but I'm not as convinced. Because, again, going back to what we talked about, the youngsters and being loaned out to Marítimo, Benfica and JJ, all he cared about was winning titles. He didn't give a shit if it was black, white, blue, Mexican, Hispanic, Chinese, whatever. He just wanted the best. And at the time, there is not a single, but I don't give a crap how big of a Bernardo fan you are. There is not a single person on earth at the time, or even now, that could tell me with a straight face that Bernardo was a better option than Gaitán and Toto Salvio at the time. You had Enzo, you had Matic in the middle. Like, where was the kid going to play? Now you want to tell me as a backup, maybe, but at some players, some, and I'm not saying that was the case with Bernardo, but some players, the clubs make the decisions to let them go out on loan or to let them play on the B team, for example, where they could play the full 90 and learn more from full 90 than actually having them on the bench and playing 5 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game, because it actually holds the development back. It's better. So maybe JJ thought he had a player there, but at the time he wasn't a better alternative than the other options. And to stunt his growth and have him play a couple minutes a game, might as well just leave him on a B team. And again, bro, this right now is a conversation that we're having, because Bernardo's been a phenomenal player. But I'll come look, João Cancelo's a phenomenal player. Nobody talks about him. He's at the same exact time. Come nobody talks about João Cancelo.
I'm gonna close my book.
Come nobody talks about him. There's other look. At the time, Benfica was coming off of 11 years where they won jack crap. Then they win a title. Then they win another 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, without winning anything. Benfica, in like 15 to 20 years, had won one title. JJ didn't give a shit who was what. And then they finally started winning titles when JJ arrived. And all he cared about was putting up those W's. And I know JJ's done a lot of wrong. I get it. But he didn't care. At the time, he cared about just winning. It didn't matter where the player came from, what nationality he was, how old he was. He wanted to play the best players possible, and that's what he did. And as a Benfiquista, I hope that's what Lage does as well. I want the best players to play, regardless of age, regardless of nationality, regardless of where they come from. It's whoever's best suited today. That's who's going to give us our best opportunity. That's why you guys, not Dave so much because he adores Sferovic, but you and a lot of other – are getting impatient with Sferovic because what? He's not performing, right? You want other – yeah, the guy's not – take him out. So at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, which is the best – the player at the moment, who's best suited, who's performing at the top of his game right now, that's who I want to play.
Fair enough. All right. Well, like I said, this is a conversation that we could be here all night discussing this and hitting the same walls and
bring it to Twitter, baby. 10-10. Holla.
Agreeing to disagree. We'll wrap it up next week. We have international break, or this weekend, wherever it is. We have international break, so we will not have a podcast next week. We will be on break. As a matter of fact, I will be in Portugal. So unfortunately, no Benfica game for me to catch, but it is what it is. Anyway, at 10CO10 is where you could find Cristiano on Twitter and argue and ask him questions. At Benfica Podcast is where the podcast Twitter, official Twitter lives at. Dave, I screwed this up last week. At 87DO87, right?
Yeah, not DO87DO. I don't know who that is, but they got some extra followers.
So BenficaPodcast.com, planetbenfica.co.uk. Don't forget BenficaIndependent.com, Brink, Benfica FM, História Gloriosa, As Águias, and all the other wonderful Benfica projects that are out there. Benfica After Night. I'm sorry. I forget to mention people, then they get upset. You all know who you are, and you all deserve my respect. Anyway, thanks everybody. Take care. Have a wonderful international break. And if you need to watch some Benfica, just turn on Benfica TV. I'm sure there will be some kind of Benfica game on. Later, everyone.